Driving at night can be dangerous, but AAA says it could be much safer with new headlight technology. We're talking about adaptive driving beam headlights here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Turning on the high beams can solve the problem, but a majority of drivers don't use high beams regularly. What questions do you have about adaptive driving beam headlights? We're at 800-642-1234. Nick Jarmus is the Public Affairs Director for AAA Wisconsin. Nick, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Oh, thank you for having me, Kate.
So right now, most cars have low beams and high beams, and a driver can switch between the two. So when it comes to staying safe on the road, why might that not be enough?
Well, first of all, a lot of drivers will either not use high beams when they really should be for a number of reasons, or they don't switch back and forth when they should, which can cause difficulty for drivers who are approaching them from the other direction or are in front of them and close enough where the lights are shining directly into their mirrors. And that's one of the reasons that people avoid high beam headlights even when they should put them on, because they don't want to be that person who, once another car, turns around the bend and is approaching them from the other direction, that forgets to turn them off or doesn't turn them off in time. And then, feels like they're being rude or a bad driver or an uncourteous driver.
Well, what do we know about how much more dangerous driving at night is versus during the day?
We know that the majority of fatal crashes happen at night during darkness hours. We also know that especially for teen drivers, that escalates even higher, which is why we limit the ability of teen drivers to drive at night during the first few years that they have their license, because that reduction in visibility has such a huge impact on reaction time and just the ability to scan the roadway ahead and take in all of the information that's needed. And what we also know, as it relates to headlights, is that as speed limits have been increased and as people tend to ignore the speed limit and drive, faster than the speed limit, they're often driving faster than their headlights can throw light onto the area. So that, even further reduces your reaction time and your ability to scan far enough ahead to see objects and then react to them in time. And that's where high beam headlights can significantly increase your safety, because they allow you to illuminate the road far enough ahead that you're not outrunning the light, basically.
Well, let's talk about adaptive driving beam headlights, or ADB. How does this technology work?
This technology works by basically leaving your high beams on permanently, but then shading a portion of the light when it detects that there's either a vehicle close enough in front of you or a vehicle approaching from the other direction. This technology has been in use in Europe and in other international markets for quite some time. It's been very successful, we believe. It's difficult to directly compare crash rates and fatality rates between countries, because there's so many other factors that go into it. So we can't necessarily say how many fatality reductions, can be attributed or how much of that difference can be attributed to this technology. But we do know that it greatly increases the light that's on the road ahead of a driver, which then does increase their safety. There's been some similar technologies in use in some U.S. models in recent years that essentially switch between the high beam and low beam. So that's a little different than leaving them on and then shading them. We believe that the adaptive high beam technology or the adaptive beam technology is superior to those technologies and does provide more and more consistent light for drivers.
We're talking about a new kind of headlight that's available in Europe and Canada, not yet legal here in the U.S. It could make drivers safer at night by illuminating more of the road without blinding oncoming drivers. It's called Adaptive Driving Beam Headlights, or ADB. And Nick Jarmus is our guide. He's Director of Public Affairs for AAA Wisconsin. Let's go to the phones with Tom in Port Wing. Hi, Tom.
Hey, good morning. I have a 1964 Cadillac with a device on the dash that did that very same thing, and I've often wondered, because it's one of the most dangerous and annoying things, it would automatically dim the lights. And this is very old technology. Mine does not work, but I'm wondering how come it wasn't adapted long ago?
Great question, Tom. Nick?
You know, that I don't necessarily know why it's taken so long. And it's not the only example of technology that has been around for a while, but has taken a long time to be adapted or standardized. Even something like anti-lock brakes, which weren't standardized until the 80s, had been around since the 40s. So sometimes it just takes some time for research to catch up, for us to be able to make the case that this does create a significant enough safety benefit that it is worth mandating. Or in this case, we are looking for it to be mandated. But the first step is just allowing it, because right now they're not allowed. Toyota actually is the one that first approached the federal government and said, we'd like to put these in our vehicles for North America, for U.S. consumption. And so there was a proposed rules change from the National Highway Safety Administration that we provided comments on from AAA and said we support making this change to allow this technology in the U.S.
Well, Daryl from Iron Woods wants to know about those blue beam headlights. How did they pass a safety test in the U.S.? Because they can induce night blindness.
Those certainly, that's a separate issue, the type of bulb that's used. And we hear those comments all the time. We hear those complaints. Depending on exactly what you're talking about, some of them didn't pass. And in some cases, those lights are not approved by NHTSA and may or may not be prohibited by certain state laws. So, there are some aspects of a vehicle that, are mandated or allowed by federal regulation. And then there are some aspects of it that are legislated on the state level. And so that's something that I don't want to say has fallen through the cracks, but I don't think that they're necessarily explicitly allowed, mm-hmm. and I don't think they're necessarily explicitly prohibited by the federal government. That's something that then falls onto the state level to legislate.
Quickly, Nick, as we wrap up, if you have a burnt-out headlight, there are lots of options at the store. Any suggestions as to what we should be looking for?
Well, first of all, is just making sure that you are getting the correct replacement lamp that's recommended for your vehicle. If you're at the heart or the auto parts store, they should be able to help walk you through that. Either looking at your manual or looking at the catalogs that they have from the light manufacturers. But you also want to try to find something that matches what's already in there. So we would recommend not mixing and matching different bulb styles.
Well, Nick, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure.
Nick Jarmus is Director of Public Affairs for AAA Wisconsin. We've been talking about smart headlights that help drivers see farther without blinding oncoming cars. Coming up, we talk with writer and poet Kwame Alexander about his new children's book called The Undefeated. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about the new children's book called The Undefeated. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. It's a poetic tribute to African Americans and the struggles and triumphs over hundreds of years. We travel through slavery, we travel through the civil rights movement, recent police shootings, and contemporary milestones in sports and literature, music, politics. But the words are sparse. The images are bold and beautiful. Let's bring in Kwame Alexander to talk about his 32nd book. He is a poet, educator, and Newbery Medal-winning author for excellence in children's literature. His new book is called The Undefeated, and it was originally performed for ESPN's sports and culture website, The Undefeated. Kwame, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Well, each stanza begins with the words, "This is for," and it's a jumping-off point for you. Can you start by reading the first few stanzas of your poem, The Undefeated?
This is for the unforgettable, the swift and sweet ones who hurdled history and opened a world of possible, the ones who survived America by any means necessary, and the ones who didn't.
You describe this as a love letter to Black America, and then you revise that, a love letter to America. What and whom are you paying homage to?
You know, I'm paying homage to those who made it possible for us to be where we are today. You know, I'm paying homage to those who made it possible for Barack Obama to be elected president of the United States. You know, I wrote this piece to share with my daughter and her friends, her classmates, like this very diverse group of kids, these fifth graders, these fourth graders, about sort of how we got to this point in our country, where how our country was founded, on whose backs it was built. So it's really a love letter to America. We forget about all the, you know, the founding fathers. Yeah, great. But we forget about all the people who sort of worked, you know, toiled from sun up to sun down. And I wanted to, you know, sort of pay tribute to that and show amidst that challenge, at best, tragedy at worst, there was a lot of triumph that came out of that. And so, you know, I tell my kid, like most kids who complains about cleaning up their bed, you know, or having to read, you know, 30 minutes a day or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
And look, there were people who came before you that struggled, that did a lot, that worked tirelessly, that sacrificed so that you could, you know, had the option of reading for 30 minutes and then playing Xbox, you know, or going to school, going to any school you want to go to, or just living this life. And so you got to be a willing participant in life, and you got to tackle the woes in order to have the wonders. And there are people before you who did that, and they not only survived, but they thrived.
In referencing those people who hurdled history and opened a world of possible, and then the next page, they survived America by any means necessary. Some of these people we don't know, but some of these people are so well known. How do you bridge that gap?
You know, it's our great grandparents. It's our great great grandparents. It's, you know, we often hear about all the famous people, the Rosa Parks and the Martin Luther Kings, who were ordinary people who did extraordinary things, no doubt. But there were folks like my great 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 grandfather, March Corprew, who fought in the Civil War for the Union, came back, bought a bunch of land, built houses for each of his children, and created this community. And how do you pick up from that sort of life? How do you pick up from having been enslaved and not in control of your own destiny, fighting in a war, and then the next day, you know, having to then control your own destiny? Like, how do you get that grit and that will and that skill? Like, that's extraordinary. And so I really wanted to not just look at the people who we know, but the people who we don't, who did these things so that, you know, and survived it. Like, and I wanted to look at that. And so, you know, the illustrations on those pages are people we don't know. And certainly the illustrator, Kadir Nelson, you know, made those decisions about, you know, the faces that he was going to paint. And I think he did a marvelous job.
They're spectacular. The illustrations just grab you, and they're such a beautiful compliment to the words on the page. You know, there must have been a really tremendous collaboration there.
You know what? There wasn't.
Well, really?
There was a spiritual collaboration. You know, but it's so funny because, you know, I had seen some of his early sketches for the book, and I sent him a note, like, on one of the pages, like one of the spreads. I had a question about everything else was marvelous and magical. And I sent him a note that said, look, I think this particular spread needs to be changed. This is what I think needs to happen, et cetera, yada, yada, yada. And I got a note back. And don't quote me on this, but it says something to the effect of, tell Kwame I didn't give him any notes on his poem.
Nice.
So, you know, don't bother my artistic process. And he was right. You know, and so I think, so there was no collaboration, but there was like complete spiritual alignment and collaboration for two artists. And he essentially took my words and created this masterpiece with his artwork and told a whole nother story.
Tremendous respect. Yeah. Kwame Alexander is a Newbery Medal winning author, two-time Caldecott honoree, joins us during National Poetry Month to discuss his picture book, The Undefeated. There's a line for you to join us at 800-642-1234. What stories of America's history involving Black Americans need to be known, understood, and celebrated? How does hearing the poem The Undefeated make you feel? And what makes heroes to you? You can call in. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Kwame, there's the section of the poem that acknowledges those who survived America by any means necessary, as we've been talking about. And then the next page is a line of text on white blank pages, and it reads, and the ones who didn't. And it's a stark contrast to all the rich colors in the other illustrations. It feels like a pause. What are you trying to help us understand there?
Yeah, let's take a pause. You know, let's have a moment of silence. Let's think about those people who did not make it. And when I show this page to kids, or adults for that matter, this is the page that sort of gets everyone saying, it's that aha moment. Like, wow, yeah, this happened. And there are people who did not make it to the other side, who did not cross the River Jordan. And it means so many different things to so many people. And I think that's the beauty of that page, is that it lets you sort of have that spiritual journey for yourself as the reader. And the other thing I think it does, it's a testament to, again, to Kadir, who, you know, like you mentioned, is a two-time Caldecott honoree. Caldecott is like the most distinguished children's book illustration award in the country. Mm. And he's received the Caldecott honor twice for his artwork. Yet on this particular page, which is stunning and breathtaking and heart-wrenching, there's no art. And so for him to be able to take that step back and say, look, you know, I'm going to give up some of my art, I'm going to sacrifice what I do for the greater good, for the greater cause, because I realized that the story from tragedy to triumph, from pain to progress, is more important than me, than Kwame, than our art, because this is really about truth telling.
Kwame, did these words come to you all at once, or was this a gradual progression in terms of putting this book together?
I'm pretty sure it came to me at once, in the sense that I'll think about something for days or weeks or months before I even write anything down. I'll have this sort of thinking through, brainstorming process going on. I'll be at a stoplight thinking about it. I got a friend who, she does that, a writer friend, and she writes notes down on her hands while she's driving.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not that smart. I'll just try to think it through
nonstop for days, weeks, or months. And eventually when I sit down to write, I will have, you know, sort of a beginning, a middle, and an end. I'll have an understanding of what this story is. And so that's what happened with this probably. It was 2008 when I started writing it. I don't remember this particular circumstances, but I know when I went back to rewrite it, to retool it for ESPN back in 2016, I think I was in the parking lot of a Banana Republic in Nashville. I was on tour, and so I remember rewriting it in the car, and that took probably about 30 minutes.
We're talking about Kwame Alexander's new children's book. It's called The Undefeated. It's a celebration of African-American heroes through poetry and bold art to tell the story about Black achievement and struggle over hundreds of years. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Parents and educators, what is the value of having this kind of history and poetry available to children? Do you buy children's books that tackle tough topics? Let's talk about it right after this news update. We're exploring the new children's book called The Undefeated during National Poetry Month. You're with us on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kend. And author Kwame Alexander's poetic tribute to African-American heroes brings to light the struggles, the prejudice, the oppression, those who survived and those who didn't. And then in the afterword of the book, Kwame explains why he wrote the poem and why he did not shy away from acknowledging the pain and suffering of Black Americans. You can join in. A line's for you at 800-642-1234. What is your story of being Black in America, and how do you want it to be told? Join in by phone. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Author Kwame Alexander stays with us as we talk about his poem, The Undefeated. And Kwame, you're going to share more of the poem with us, starting with, "This is for the undeniable."
This is for the undeniable, the ones who scored with chains on one hand and faith in the other. This is for the unflappable, the sophisticated ones who box adversity and tackle vision, who shine their light for the world to see and don't stop till the break of dawn. This is for the unafraid, the audacious ones who carried the red, white, and weary blues on the battlefield to save an imperfect union. The righteous marching ones who sang, "We shall not be moved because Black lives matter." This is for the unspeakable. This is for the unspeakable. This is for the unspeakable.
When you say that three times, "This is for the unspeakable," oh, who are you talking about? Who are the unspeakable?
It's those, you know, I remember talking to my wife and asking her, when are we going to talk to my kid, our daughter, about slavery? And she, I think she was 6 or 7 at the time. And she was like, because it's just the hardest thing. It's hard for teachers. It's hard for parents. How do you talk about that? And my wife said, well, when she comes home and wants to talk about it, when she brings it up, that's when we'll talk about it. And she had a situation in class where one of her students made a comment about slavery that was at best inappropriate and at worst just, you know, offensive. And so she came home and wanted to talk about it. And that was in fourth grade, and that's, or third grade, and that's when we started that conversation. How do you talk about four Black girls being bombed in a church? How do you talk about the Middle Passage and Africans being, you know, brought over in the holds of ships, chained head to foot? You know, how do you talk about Black lives, Black boys, Black men being killed, being moved from this earth like dust in a windstorm? How do you talk about those things? Those things are hard, and they're difficult, and they're sad.
How did you start the conversation with her?
With a book. That's the beauty of literature. Is that,
of course.
You know, we have these tools that allow us to talk about the weighty subjects, themes, experiences in our world. The books will do the work for us, teachers. The books will do the work for us, parents. You just got to find those books that are going to be filled with the kind of honesty and beauty that I find to be palatable and digestible for not only kids but adults. And I think that poetry is a great way to work. Like, you find a good poem that uses a few words, uses some rhythm, some repetition, and I find that you can talk about these emotionally weighty things in a poem. So, yeah, I went to a poem. I went to a book, and that's my jump-off point for anything these days, it seems.
And it's really interesting how you bridge the gap between Black Lives Matter and the past, the history from an imperfect union and the Civil War, because I just haven't seen those clear links before until your book.
Well, I guess thank you for that. You know, I think, again, we are more similar than we are, you know, dissimilar when you think about whether you're looking at white people, black people. The history of this country is so tied, it's so connected, and there's a clear through line. And I think we got to understand it. We have to acknowledge it. We have to appreciate it. We have to apologize for it in order to really be able to move forward and live in this union, this imperfect union. We gotta be real about it. And I think that honesty and truth can allow us to not repeat the same things over and over. You gotta know your history or you'll be doomed to repeat it. And we gotta do better. We gotta do better for our children.
There are subtle nods to lines and lyrics through your poem. Help us understand some of the phrases from other poets and historical figures and musicians that bring that musical quality to the poem.
Yeah, so, you know, you got quite a few nods to one of my favorite poets, Langston Hughes, whose first book in 1926, I think, was called The Weary Blues.
Mm.
And so when I wrote that line, who carried the red, white, I think the first draft, it was the audacious ones who carried the red, white, and blues. And I thought, well, it's not just the blues, it's the weary blues. And of course, that was my first nod to Langston. And then there's another nod to Langston. He wrote a poem called My People. The stars are beautiful, so the faces of my people. Beautiful also is the sun. Beautiful also are the souls of my people. And so I wanted to sort of pay homage to Langston and Black as the Night is Beautiful. There's another line that looks at the Big Sea, which is the title of Langston's first autobiography. So I guess there's a lot of Langston Hughes in here. And one of the things that I think Langston Hughes did is he talked about tragedy in his work, but he did it with humor. He did it with grace. He did it with wit. He did it with intellect. And so you were able to get through his work. And yeah, you may have teared up a little bit, but you smiled. And this is not necessarily a humorous poem. I get it. But I did try to write it in a way that, yeah, you got to a point in the narrative, in the story, in the picture book, where you at least began to smile a little bit. And I think, you know, he's famous for one of these sayings. It's laughing to keep from crying. And so I think there are a few pieces in here where I try to make you smile, because you got to think that through oppression, you know, through slavery, through the civil rights, through Black Lives Matter, like, if you don't smile, if you don't laugh, then you probably aren't going to survive. Like, you got to find a way to laugh and live and love through all of that. And I believe that, you know, and I try to teach my children that all the time.
We're talking with Kwame Alexander, a Newbery Medal winning author. The book is called The Undefeated. And we want to hear from you. What does this history of the good and the bad mean for you? Where do you find hope? What is the value of knowing and embracing this history? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. Kwame, did you struggle with leaving historical figures out of this poem or out of the book, that it's like, oh, I wanted to get them in, but I just couldn't fit them or didn't know how to do it?
I didn't. And again, with the exception of that one page where I actually list some names of athletes, I didn't list any names, like, intentionally. And so when you look through the book and you see these faces that are familiar, you know, when you see Miles Davis or when you see Maya Angelou or you see Dr. King or you see Muhammad Ali or Althea Gibson, those were choices that Kadir Nelson made. Like, he decided the faces that he was going to put in here. I had no say in that. I didn't struggle with that. He may have struggled with it, I'm sure, trying to decide who he was going to focus on. But no, I didn't.
You can allow the pictures to do some of the talking.
Yeah. Again, I think he tells another story with the illustrations. A good illustrator will paint the words. A great illustrator will paint the words that aren't there. Mm-hmm. And he did that. He's probably one of our most celebrated, you know, portrait artists in America today.
You've been in lots of schools. What is your reaction from the kids?
Well, you know, that's a great question. The teachers are like, well, how you sure you want to read this? Are our kids ready for it? And I'm like, well, watch this. And I read the story, and I pause, I stop, and I ask the kids, what's the book about? And they give their thoughts. And I'll read a little bit more, and I'll say, all right, what's the book about now? And they'll have these conversations amongst themselves, and I'm not guiding them. I'm just listening. And I'll read and stop again. And the kids have a bunch of questions, and they have a lot of answers. And I think sometimes we try to explain so much. And I don't know if you need to explain it on the first read. I think you can let the kids have that discussion and discourse. And the things I've heard from kids let me know that they get it. That they're a lot smarter than we give them credit for, and we have to allow them to have the space to use these tools to imagine a better world.
We're talking about Kwame Alexander's new children's book called The Undefeated, a tribute to African Americans throughout history, from the time of being captured, brought on ships, slavery, civil rights, modern times. You can join in throughout the conversation, 800-642-1234. What questions do you have for Kwame Alexander about his poem, The Undefeated? Join in by phone, email ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back in a minute on the Ideas Network. Author and poet Kwame Alexander calls his new children's book a love letter to America. We're talking about his 32nd book called The Undefeated here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Undefeated started out as a letter to Kwame's then-baby daughter shortly after President Obama was elected in 2008. In the back of the book, there's a list of all the historical figures and events that are featured in the artwork. Through the poetic stanzas, we encounter Jesse Owens, we encounter Zora Neale Hurston, Langston Hughes, black soldiers in the Civil War. There's references to Serena Williams, LeBron James, Trayvon Martin, many, many more. How does this poem resonate with you? What does it make you think about? Is it the topic, the words chosen, the cadence of its delivery? Tell us about it. Join a conversation, 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. And throughout our conversation, writer and poet Kwame Alexander has shared his poem, The Undefeated, with us. Kwame, let's hear the final stanzas of the poem.
This is for the unlimited, unstoppable ones, the dreamers and doers who swim across the big sea of our imagination and show us the majestic shores of the promised land. the Wilma Rudolphs, the Muhammad Ali's, the Althea Gibsons, the Jesse Owens's, the Jordans and the LeBrons, the Serenas and the Cheryls, the Reese Whitley's and the Undiscovered. This is for the unbelievable, the We Real Cool ones. This is for the unbending, the Black as the Night is Beautiful ones. This is for the underdogs and the uncertain, the unspoken but no longer untitled. This is for the undefeated. This is for the undefeated. This is for you. And you, and you, this is for us.
This section of the poem feels like triumph. Do you feel that energy when you read it?
I'm sorry, can you say that again?
This poem really feels at this point like triumph. And I'm wondering, do you feel that sort of energy propelling you in this passage?
Absolutely. I mean, I wanted the book to end on, you know, empowerment. I wanted to show that progress. I wanted to show, you know, that last spread. You know, I get sort of choked up when I'm reading this book. It's just hard not to. It's been 9-10 years since I first wrote it, but it still hits me. When you get to that last spread and you see these children, and they're just full of light and love and joy, and they're just smiling.
And they have a little bit of tears in their eyes, the girl does, and she's beaming, but her eyes look like they have some tears.
Yeah, you know, because we made it. We waded in the water. We survived. We thrived. And you got to recognize all the struggles, and those struggles bring tears. And at the same time, they fuel you, they motivate you. You know, Maya Angelou said, though we may face defeat, we must never be defeated. But that doesn't mean you're not feeling it. You're not feeling that, you know, those obstacles. You're not feeling, you know, those woes. But that spread is really, you know, about the woes and the wonder, and it's that balance.
In the afterword of the book, you write that to truly know who we are as a country, we have to accept and embrace all of our woes and wonders. Why is that? What progress can be made through that?
Well, I mean, it's like with my daughter. My daughter, she was on a basketball team, and she's the tallest kid on the team because I'm pretty tall. And I said, just put your hands up. Nobody will be able to shoot. Just put your hands up. You know, and she did it a couple times, and she blocked shots easily. And she was playing a lackluster game. I wasn't really impressed with her energy, and they ended up winning by like 16 points. And she said, Dad, didn't I do good? And I said, nah, you didn't. You won, but you didn't play up to your ability. You sort of, and if you aren't willing to put in the energy and the work, then why play? And she just was devastated. She just started crying. And I felt bad as a parent, like, what kind of dad am I? And I'm horrible. And the next week, she practiced every day. After school, I saw her out in the yard practicing, and she was in the All-Star game. And I've never seen this child play like that. She won MVP, and she put forth the effort and the work. And I think sometimes in order to sort of create these most valuable people that we call children, to make them into the adults that we need them to be, they got to recognize that they have to put in the work, that even though, you know, you may not be in your best light, even though there are struggles, even though there are times where, you know, things aren't as good as they could be, you have a responsibility to yourself, to your community, to this country, to humanity, to become the best human being you can. And there are far too many people who've sacrificed for you to be able to do that. And if we all just sort of put in the work, be committed to excellence, you know, respect one another, I think we'll become more human. And that's the best thing that this country needs. We just need more humanity.
Kwame, switching gears here for a moment, you curate this imprint for Houghton Mifflin Harcourt called Versify. What is your vision for the works being published under this imprint?
I want to publish good books. You know, I tell people all the time that, you know, for so long, publishing has been this dinner party. And there's a beautiful table, and there's eight chairs, and there are four or five people who are always at the dinner party having a great time, a great meal, great conversation, a great experience. And there are three or four chairs that are always empty. And every now and then there's a special guest allowed. I want to make sure all the chairs at the table are filled all the time. And so we all get to sort of partake in a delicious array of meals. Everybody gets to bring their voice, their story, their delicious meals to the table. I want to publish good books that make the dinner party inclusive and really representative of this beautiful place we call America.
What do you have your eye on for poetry and getting more poetry out there?
More poetry. Poetry is my first love. It's how I learned how to, you know, sort of appreciate literature. My mom immersed me in Dr. Seuss and Lucille Clifton and Langston Hughes and Nikki Giovanni. And so anytime I get a chance to, you know, to read a poetry book for children, you know, a submission for Versify, it just enthralls me, whether it's a novel that's told through poems, whether it's a children's picture book that's a poem. But again, I'm not just looking for poetry. I'm looking for prose. I'm looking for nonfiction. I want great books that are going to inspire and sort of uplift and help kids imagine a better world. When I think about the kind of books I want intelligent entertainment. I want page turners that kids aren't going to be able to put down, that are telling great stories, that ultimately are going to leave kids with some tools to help to make them better.
And perhaps to see their world in a different light.
So that they can, yeah, in order to make the world better, you got to first be able to imagine it. And so I want books that are going to do that.
Well, Kwame, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Kwame Alexander is a poet, educator, and Newbery Medal winning author for excellence in children's literature. New picture book out. It's called The Undefeated. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Thank you.